Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. The pain and suffering in Colombia in South America has gotten a lot of attention in recent years. Now, some of that anguish is documented in a local photographic exhibit. We'll have more in a little while after a discussion about a new play telling the story of three refugee women who come to St. Louis to start new lives. And refugees are part of the story St. Louis Public Radio's Duri Buscarin will tell us today. Duri is currently on assignment in the East African nation of Uganda as part of a fellowship funded by the Howard G. Buffett Foundation. She's there to connect the dots between Ugandan agriculture and St. Louis. I spoke to her yesterday via Skype and asked her to tell us something about her host country.
I'm pretty close to the equator, but it's the rainy season, so it's actually pretty similar weather to St. Louis right now. It gets kind of colder at night. It rains a lot. It's very green, very lush. I was not in Kampala for the whole time. The first week and a half, we were in northern Uganda, based out of Gulu, which is where, if listeners are familiar with the Lord's Resistance Army and Joseph Kony, back in like the early 2000s and the 90s. Gulu was the district where they were kind of based. And so we had these stories of children who would walk in from the surrounding towns and villages into the city to sleep in the streets so that they wouldn't have to be abducted at night.
You know, I think many of the stories that we've heard about Uganda for the last quarter century have indicated a very unstable area. How would you describe it now? Have things settled down to a kind of normal routine?
Actually, Uganda is extremely stable. It's surrounded by a lot of war in the Democratic Republic of the Congo, in South Sudan. Uganda is actually where a lot of refugees from those countries are streaming in right now. And it's actually, I think Uganda, it has a pretty autocratic government, but I think they're about 10 years out of having really a war. And so it's very stable. The economy appears to be improving, and it's really nice to visit.
You've spent some time visiting in a refugee camp, as I understand it.
I am on a trip with the International Women's Media Foundation, and there were two trips. One was conservation, where people, to be selected, you had to pitch stories about agriculture or conservation in Uganda. That was the trip I was on, and then it was also merged with a trip of lady reporters reporting on refugee issues. I've never been to a refugee camp before, and it's really something you'll never forget. It's really painful to see all of the pain that people have gone through, but also really illuminating. I mean, Uganda takes a pretty unique approach to refugees, and they have a lot of freedom of movement. They're given a plot of land and materials to build a home, and the idea is that they will be self-sufficient. They can grow their own food. It doesn't always work that way. A lot of people said they were starving. A lot of people said there was no room to grow the food they needed to feed their family. And the rations from the World Food Program have just been cut in half about 2 months ago for most refugees, a lot of them, people who have been there for more than a year.
And the people we're talking about are coming from the Democratic Republic of Congo and also from Sudan, correct?
The camps that we went to are right across the border from South Sudan. So all of those refugees were from South Sudan.
What are their prospects? I get a sense from what you said that they're there more or less permanently if they've been given plots of land and that sort of thing.
Not necessarily. It's really considered to be temporary, and I don't think anyone would want to live in that situation permanently for a very long time. But there's definitely a sense in this area because there has been, I mean, Uganda had a war about 10 years ago. Democratic Republic of the Congo is having a war. You would meet refugees who have been refugees before. They've been over the border before. People in Uganda are often very welcoming to refugees because they've experienced war as well. And so it's a really interesting thing that happens when you have a region where people are more tolerant of each other because they have this shared experience. And a lot of refugees who come into Uganda because they are legally allowed to do so end up moving into cities and starting businesses of their own. And then they become permanent residents.
You said early on that it was something painful to see. Be a little more specific, if you would, about what conditions are like there.
I think that the news here is that, I mean, I looked at the numbers from the UNHCR, and about 150,000 refugees from South Sudan have come into Uganda in the past 2 months or so. It's been a huge spike. And because of that influx, the World Food Program had to have rations. And it wasn't a whole lot of food to begin with that they were giving people. And in particular, they were giving people this grain called red sorghum, which South Sudanese people were not used to. They said it went right through them and gave them a lot of digestive problems, particularly children. And doctors even said, this is a really tough grain on your system. And, you know, if you don't have enough water and other types of protein or fiber in your diet, it can really be bad for you. And so you see a lot of kids who are clearly malnourished. You see a lot of kids in health clinics. Doctors in health clinics say that malnutrition and malaria are the most common things they see. I was walking through a refugee camp taking photos, and I kind of stand out, and people came up to me and would, you know, gesture to their stomachs and pull their skin, saying how hungry they were. I think the painful thing is to know that this is happening, and there's not a whole lot, you know, you as an individual can do, because just the scope of this is so huge. So that's what I would say was painful.
Well, the refugee story internationally is certainly one of despair and pain. I think there are 60 million refugees in various parts of the world right now. Let's move back to the earlier part of your visit and tell us something about the mission. It was agricultural, basically, is where your emphasis and attention was, correct?
Yes. So the reason I'm here and the story I pitched was the Danforth Center in St. Louis started developing this genetically modified cassava. They've been funded for the project for about 10 years, and they were definitely working on it before then. They're now in field trials in Namulongwe, Uganda, which is close to Kampala, which I'll actually be visiting tomorrow. They're working also in conjunction with basically the USDA of Kenya. And the idea of this genetically modified cassava is that it's virus resistant. And so there are two main viruses that are really affecting yields in Uganda. And the idea is that a genetically modified version could be a solution. What I really found out while I was talking to farmers here is that they have a lot of local solutions that are not GM. I mean, you know how to the saying, like, to a hammer, every problem is a nail. It's pretty clear that GM is not a silver bullet, for lack of a better word. There's really a lot of issues that are contributing to low agricultural yields in Uganda that are not related to the viruses and could be solved in other ways. That said, I think that there's a lot of hope that this particular strain of cassava could really improve food security in this region.
Why is cassava so important?
Oh, cassava is so cool. So it goes by multiple names. It's native to South America. So you might also know it by tapioca, manioc, or yuca. And it's basically a woody shrub. It's got these long, dark green leaves. It can grow pretty tall. There's a woody stem that's kind of like a very small trunk. And there are these big, big tubers that you can boil and mash, dry and grind, or distill into ethanol. And people also use the leaves. You can eat them, stew them kind of like spinach. It's actually pretty tasty. People use the stems as firewood. And people say the cool thing about cassava is it's kind of like a living root cellar. It's there whenever you need it. It grows for a really long time. And so it becomes very predictable. It can grow in really bad soil. It can grow in times of drought. And so people grow this as a way to feed their families because it's something they can always rely on. The challenge with brown streak disease, which is one of these viruses that they're trying to address with the genetically modified crop, is that you generally don't know that your cassava has brown streak disease until you pull it up and you're harvesting it. So you could have been growing that for a year and a half and never known it had brown streak disease until you harvest it. It can really impact farmers if they don't plant multiple crops. Most of them do. It was also pushed by aid organizations. They were trying to get people to grow more of it just because it's a very hardy crop.
So just to be clear, it is a staple in the diet of the people of Uganda and also used for fuel.
I haven't seen a whole lot of ethanol distilleries. I think that's relatively new, but I've seen cassava all over. I was doing an interview today in a a lady gave me this little, it's like a fried cassava and banana patty that she had for lunch, and it was really tasty. And a lot of people eat it pretty frequently. I mean, it's almost as ubiquitous as a potato in, Europe or something.
Clearly very, very important, needless to say. There are concerns, as I understand it, from some of the things I've been reading and that you have written. There are concerns over there in Uganda about genetically modified crops. I mean, not everybody is signed on for that particular technology.
Right. There's actually quite a bit of opposition. Uganda has a pretty autocratic government. The current president, Museveni, is very supportive of GMOs. And so I think most people who oppose them are kind of resigned to the fact that this will probably happen. A lot of the advocacy right now is around making whatever law is passed a stricter law. So they are advocating for things like labeling GMOs so that farmers know what they're growing and people know what they're eating. They're really hoping that if Uganda introduces genetically modified crops for the first time, that they do it in a responsible way and with as much planning and responsible agriculture as possible.
What are they afraid of with regard to the genetically modified crops?
I think that, in the U.S. we take it for granted because we've been around GM crops for so long. I think that in a lot of countries where they aren't such a part of the farming landscape, there's a lot of concern. I mean, I've heard concerns about health issues being tied to GMOs. A lot of people say that, oh, there isn't evidence yet that GMOs aren't harmful, but then other people say there's no evidence yet, at what point do you prove that they're not harmful? And then I've also heard concerns that are religious. I think some people feel like it's playing God. And I've also heard concerns that Uganda needs to support its organic subsistence agriculture that it's been doing for centuries. And I think that there's a concern that it would change the agricultural sector and industry too much to the point where it may be unrecognizable. I've also heard concerns that a GMO might be an invasive plant. I don't think that there's a whole lot of research to support that, but it's definitely a concern people have.
I have one final question for you because I know you have other things to do, but it may be a little far away, but has there been any discussion amongst people you've talked to with regard to the Monsanto-Bayer merger, which will have an impact on the kinds of things we're talking about?
I haven't heard a lot of conversation about that right now. I think that Monsanto is definitely a name that people know and associate with something they don't trust. I've heard a lot of concerns that the latest version of the biotech bill that was tabled by Uganda's parliament, there's a concern that it was very much in the favor of multinational companies like Monsanto. I think people feel like they're being taken advantage of or that they could be taken advantage of. And Monsanto has a name that people recognize and do not associate with necessarily good things. So I think that as far as the merger goes, I don't think that there's been a whole lot of discussion yet, but I'm sure it will be.
What's next on your agenda?
On my agenda, it is dinner time. So we're going to go find some really good Indian food because I've heard that's the thing to do in Kampala. But I'm just here for a few more days, wrapping up interviews. Tomorrow, I will be visiting the field trials in Namalonge to see the genetically modified cassava growing in the field. Then I'll be back home and hopefully sending more reports your way.
We'll be looking for them, Dori Viscaran. Thank you so much. Have a safe journey within Uganda, and as you return, travel safely.
Thanks for having me, Don. Take care.
St. Louis Public Radio's Dori Viscaran reporting via Skype from Uganda. She's there as part of a fellowship funded by the Howard G. Buffett Foundation. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.